From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
We are back from a very long and exhausting and unpredictable and exciting week at the PDGA Professional Disc Golf World Championships in Vermont. And we are back with another episode of PDGA Radio to break it all down. I'm joined by Sarah Lamerson. I'm Steve Hill. And Sarah, we've got a lot to talk about from Worlds. But first of all, you're still on the road. How is life out in, you're in Philly right now, right?
Yeah, I'm in Delaware County, which is just southwest of Philly. I'm actually recording from my brother's basement.
So if there are any loud noises, we apologize.
Yes.
And we'll live to see another day. But yeah, Sarah is going to be out at the Delaware Disc Golf Challenge. The PGA National Tour is right back in the mix this weekend. We're going to talk about that later in the show. But Sarah, we got to break down everything from Worlds. Holy cow. I had a great time out there. Didn't sleep much. I don't know about you, but
I actually got, I don't want to rub this in, but got like 9 solid hours of sleep every night.
Oh my gosh.
Despite the fact that the women teed off early every single day, which I'm totally fine with. And one of the days, I believe, because I had a pretty bad first round. And so I think I teed off like 7:50, and that was my earliest tee time. And I still got 9 or 9.5 hours of sleep.
You got bumped back that second day, though. Wasn't the second day with all the rain?
Yes. So the second day we played exactly one half of the first hole, and then Thunderbolt and Lightning ensued.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
And I made the mistake of, I didn't have my hood up. I was wearing a rain jacket. And then I decided to put my hood up, and there was a waterfall of water just down my back. So I was like, well, there goes that chance of staying dry at all.
Oh my goodness. Well, yeah. before we get too deep into all of the smaller experiences of Worlds, let's congratulate Greg Barsby and Paige Bierkus, 2018 PDGA World Champions. Holy cow. Sarah, if you would have told me last week that we were going to be talking about Greg Barsby and Paige Bierkus winning Worlds, I would have maybe given you Paige Bierkus.
Yeah.
But Barsby, not so much. I love both of these stories. I love seeing both of them win, especially the way they did it. They both held on to leads for, I think Barsby had it for 3 rounds and Bierkus had it for 4.
Mm-hmm.
They both had to hang tough. Remain really well composed and just play solid golf the whole weekend. So hats off to them. We're going to talk to both of them later in the show today. But yeah, we have new PDGA World Champions, and I love that we got a couple people who, this is their first major for both of them, first Worlds mm-hmm. for both of them, and really people who we did not expect, right?
Yeah. I'm looking at the new photos that are on the PDGA website right now, and there's sheer joy just emanating from both of them. They're just huge, wide, toothy smiles. It's really, really cool to see. So yeah, Greg Barsby, sorry to say if you're listening, it never crossed my mind, not because he's not a fantastic player, but just so I guess what I normally do when I'm doing picks is I obviously sort by rating and then think about who's done well here in the past. And that's been Ricky and Macbeth and all the top names, but it's, you know, both of these courses are some of these courses that you really just have to play your game on the Fox Run course. You just have to keep it in bounds. If you keep it in bounds and shoot a few under par, then, and do that consistently throughout the week, and there's no stopping you. So it was really, really cool to see them both come out on top.
Yeah. I mean, for Barsby, he averaged a fair amount over his rating. If I'm just doing the math in my head real quick, it was at least 20 plus points over his 10-20 rating. I mean, that's, you don't expect the 10-20 rated player over a 5-round tournament to be the one to, you know, come out on top. But I mean, he played strong. I've seen him in the past, and I actually talk about this with him later in our interview. You know, I've seen him in the past get into heavier situations and have, you know, a lot of outward emotions and what some people would constitute, you know, meltdowns. And I will be the first to admit, when he was going into, I think it was round three with the lead over Brewster Ridge. Maybe it was round four. When he was going back into round four at Brewster Ridge with the lead, I expected it to be, it was him and Nico LoCastro on the card, and I expected there to be a lot of outward emotions because both of them are very passionate players. And one of those two was very passionate and let things get to him, and one of them ended up winning the world championship. And so I was pleasantly surprised with how Greg Barsby maintained his composure the whole weekend. That was the biggest story for me. Like, he's got all the skills in the world. He's got forehand. He's got backhand. He hit some amazing putts this week. I think on hole four during that round at Brewster, he just he canned like a 60-footer. He had another huge one in the final round on hole 11, that hole where it's just big, long fairway, and then the green is down in a cut out of trees. And, you know, there was a point early in the final round where it looked like the wheels might come off, and he corrected, and just really, really strong, solid performance from Barsby. I was impressed. You know, we saw Paul McBeth do his Paul McBeth things, trying to make a comeback. I actually, Sarah, you and I both followed the chase card quite a bit during the final round. What did you, and that's no knock on what was going on the lead card, but it was, there was a nice big half hour gap in between due to the scheduling. And so I knew that I could watch what McBeth was doing, 'cause he started out super hot, and you know, I knew I could watch him and then see what was going to go on with the lead group afterwards. But what did you take in from McBeth's performance on the chase card that round?
I actually had another reason for following the chase card. Sean, my partner, was the,
Marshall that followed the card,
and I was like, and I hadn't really got to hang out with him all week since I was playing and he was working, so it was a good opportunity to watch the same card and be able to talk about it later. But yeah, McBeth just could not get anything going. Like, he missed some pretty makeable putts for Paul McBeth, and it was at times pretty painful to watch. He was showing a lot of emotion too. There was one point where I think actually Alyssa Van Landen captured these photos.
Oh yeah, they're great.
Well, and yeah, it's just like you can see the pain. And it's
he went and slapped the tree. I thought he punched it at first, but I went back and watched the video. He just slapped it. But I mean, really, he was dialed in the first half of the round. Then the second half of the round, what seemed like happened is like the drives were coming up short, and it's that difference of 20 to 30 feet on the later greens there, especially like hole 13. Perfect example. You know, he's outside this kind of tree line that encircles the green, and so he's got a gap that's, you know, just slightly wider than the width of a disc, and he hits the gap to get through it, and the putt just doesn't fall in. It just hits the bottom cage, and he did that on 14 too. It wasn't there, you know. So this is the award ceremony. Were you there for the awards ceremony still?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
I remember.
he talked about how this is the third time in a row he's come into second place, and then he was going to hand the mic off to Mr. Four Time, that being Josh Anthon, who now has come in second place four times at Worlds, and it was like, dang. I mean, I know he was just joking.
Yeah.
But whew, it hurt a little bit. And
I know.
And as it should, I mean, Josh Anthon was right in this thing until the end. He was battling an injury. It looked like he hurt himself midway through the round.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. He kind of was reaching at his left hip through after a forehand on hole 10. I think he may have hurt it earlier than that. But, I mean, he started off super hot, went 5 for 5, tied Barsby early, and battled back and was within one going into hole 17. And then hole 17... from the tee, you cannot see the basket. And this hole this weekend became one of my favorites in disc golf for this reason. There's a huge gallery all lining like the right side of the fairway. And Anthon throws his shot, and it looks relatively safe, and people start cheering. And then all of a sudden, you hear like gasps and groans and and clearly it picked up, caught an edge, and rolled out of bounds. It was like heartbreaking.
Obi Long?
No, it was Obi. Oh no, it was, it went, it rolled off to the side.
Oh no.
He was in front of the basket, picked up an edge and rolled all the way OB, and it was like the crowd was narrating the heartbreak the whole time while we were just on the tee pad.
From the sidelines,
It was amazing, but it was amazing. It was one of those like dramatic moments that kind of really makes you like, you know, that's what sports
live
are all
it.
About. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
And
I love that. I love that hole too. We did not, we did not have a gallery oohing and aahing when we threw. Maybe a couple people, but yeah, that's one of my favorite holes. You could either get it, or I mean, for us, it's kind of like it's not a have to get to, but definitely want to stay in bounds on that hole and at least get your three. So I love that hole.
Yeah, I think it's really nice to have a consequential hole like that down the stretch. And then hole 18, mm-hmm. the same thing. I mean, OB on either side. Saw a lot of people blow their tournaments there, or at least blow their rounds there.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Round three, we saw Macbeth go OB and then end up taking a seven. Matt Oram was right in the mix on the final round, and I think also took a seven after going OB. It's just, it's a brutal hole, and it really makes for that extra drama. So kudos to Jeff Spring and everyone at Smuggler's Notch for putting on the event. There were probably 1,500 people out there watching. The fairways were lined. It was super exciting.
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's talk FPO a little bit before we really come back and dial in a couple more things on the MPO side. But obviously, yeah. Paige Bierkus, the biggest thing I took from her performance the whole weekend, Sarah, is that it was just, she was just consistent. She never had to react to anything. She got a lead and she played super, super smart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I am very, very proud of her and happy that she won. I was, I think her dad posted a picture. I didn't realize that she was already a world champion. She was a junior world champion.
I know. How cool is that?
Yeah. And I was
2010.
Yep. And that was my first Am World. So I guess we crossed paths then, but, it's just really cool because, so I was talking to her parents afterward, and I know what we talked about several weeks ago, that she went on tour during her summer break from school. Her mom, Noemi, said that she's got a year left because she changed her major. And, you know, as we talked about, she stayed on the road because she was doing so well. And her mom was like, you know, a lot of parents would have urged their kid to go back to school. But,
absolutely.
You know, if we had done that and didn't let her follow her dream, she wouldn't have won this world championship. She's only 21 once. And I'm just like, yeah, that's awesome. Like, I don't know a lot of parents. I don't think my parents ever would have supported me.
No way.
Yeah. So, I mean, they still are like, you're on the road and you're taking off work. So, it was just really cool. I don't know if you watched the full video, but I think it was, Bobby Brown did the full video of her last round, and it was from her warm up to her last putt and the crowd going wild. And I was there in person, and I still cried at the end of the video.
Oh my gosh. Like, I was like,
so sweet.
I was tearing up like on hole 16. It was ridiculous. I don't know. Paige is just, she's really, you know, she's always been super helpful and just friendly, and like, she's just very easy to relate to, I think.
Yeah,
like, you can tell
very
she's
authentic.
And the same thing with her parents, and so like seeing them all kind of take in that moment together was just, it was really powerful, I thought. Mm-hmm. Like, it was, there was a lot of emotion, and you know, and even I don't know if you noticed, Sarah, but like at after hole 16, Paige Pierce went up and hugged Paige Bierkus.
Oh, that's when I started crying. I was like, oh my god.
And
it was
like,
just so sweet.
There was just a lot of emotion, and just really cool to see a new world champion and someone who just so genuinely like the celebration at the end, like the literally jumping up and down, like that's the kind of stuff that you know, you see in Major League Baseball and you see in the NFL and everything. And like, I feel like sometimes, like, we've gotten to the point in disc golf where some of the same people are winning so much that it's like almost old hat to them, and they don't celebrate with that kind of like visceral emotion. And like, to have her doing that, it was just so powerful and so exciting. Interesting, you know, talking about your talking with her parents about her going on tour, we will have a little more news on developments on that later when we play her interview. But really, Sarah, looking at the scores for this event, the biggest difference, hole seven, it's a 10,085 feet mm-hmm. or something like that for the FPO field, yeah. Par five, and Paige Bierkus played it. She scored a five all three times she was on it.
Oh my
gosh!
This is
at Foxhorn Meadows.
That's incredible.
She played it to par every single time. Paige Pierce took seven strokes total over par over the 3 days there, and the margin of victory for Paige Bierkus was six.
Yeah.
I mean, that hole right there was the tournament. She just played it super clean, super safe, controlled her drives. Paige Pierce really, really struggled the final round, pulled her drive to the right side, got lucky, and a tree kind of swallowed up and spit it out in bounds, but then she turned over a putter OB, turned over a putter OB again. It was really, really rough.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that was a big momentum shifter in the tournament. I mean, how are you playing that hole? How are people on your cards playing that hole? Is it, like, when Paige Bierkus is taking three fives on that, does that impress you?
Yes. So if you have a 300 foot shot, I would say 280 to 300 foot shot, first you have to clear a creek bed with a bridge, and there's a tree, right, kind of a bushy tree right in the middle. And
yeah,
so
you gotta kind of choose which side to play it on.
Yeah, so all the righties were trying to throw a high hyzer toward the right side, but if you hyzer out too much, then you're going in the creek, or you're going OB left. Or if you don't put it high enough and throw it straight, then you're going OB right over the rock wall. And that puts you out of position even more on your second shot. Because I feel like on these types of holes where you've got a long, slender fairway and there's OB left and right, if I go OB right or left on my drive, it's going to be really hard for you to put that next shot right in the middle unless you just chip shot something out there. But it's really easy to start zigzagging down the fairway and just like keep going OB left and right. So
yeah, I saw that happen quite a bit.
Yeah. What did I take? So I think the first round I took a seven. I went OB on my drive. I think I went OB twice.
I've got you for a six here in the final round.
Okay. Yes. So that was my best. I went OB on my second shot, but very, very close to being in bounds, because as you get down to about the middle of the hole, probably about 550 down, the left side of the fairway kind of ballooned out a bit,
right?
Which was, you know, righty backhand friendly. If you hyzered out a little bit too much, then you had an extra little wiggle room, and that's exactly where I went out. But I was able to salvage the six, so that was good. The other time
you actually improved every round. You went 8-7-6.
Okay, 8-7-6, yeah. The 7 I was extra upset about because I was perfectly set up for a 5. And there was OB behind the basket as well. The rock wall continued behind the basket. And then the OB stakes were about a foot in front of the rock wall. And I miscalculated the distance on my standstill putter approach shot and threw it. And I thought it was in bounds because it didn't go over the rock wall. But here I found out that the stakes were a foot in front of it, and I was between the stakes and the rock wall, and I went OB, and it was like 30 out, and I missed the putt. So anyway,
tough hole.
It was a very tough hole, especially. So the thing that's most remarkable about her taking 5-5-5 is that the first day that we played, the first or the second day, the wind was ripping like all day.
Yeah.
It must have been the second round there. Super windy. I admit I had some poor disc choice on that hole and a couple other holes that just, I mean, it's so hard to throw in the wind, and you know, you want to trust your disc and let it do what it's supposed to do, but sometimes it doesn't always work out that way. But so that was very impressive to me.
Yeah, I think this is really where her power kind of came in. Like, she was where you're saying everyone else was throwing big hyzers, like a lot of times a lower powered player, you kind of have to put a little more height on that, and that makes it susceptible to, you know, fading out early or stalling or anything like that. Every time I saw Paige throw a driver on that hole, it was low and flat, and
yeah,
she was able to really control the fade on it, and it made a big difference, I think.
That's what I, that was my play on my second shot. Typically, it's just to throw it straight down the fairway. But the other thing that I'm impressed with just by watching her over the past few events is how confident she is. Like, we know that she's a very fast player and she makes disc choice, disc selection very quickly. And then just kind of like, she doesn't always do a routine where she.
No, not really. She steps up and hucks it.
Yeah. And she's so, like, she knows that this disc is going to work and she does it very quickly and confidently. And that's very impressive. Not that by throwing quickly means that you're more confident, but it just seems like she has so much trust in her discs to do what they want them to do and doesn't question it and just executes the shot perfectly every time.
Let's run down the rest of the let's run down the top 10 on each division. So we had Paige Bierkus taking the win, 6 over par, 317 for the event, taking home $5,000. That's a nice little chunk of change. Paige Pierce in second.
Sorry,
yes.
Her average rating was 977. And she's rated 938 right now. So
yeah, that's
her next
good.
Rating update, she's going to be like, I'm going to say like 955 to 60.
You think it's going to jump up that much?
I think so. At least 950.
Got to be 50, right?
Yeah.
So second place, Paige Pierce, 12 over par, 323. Jessica Weiss and Sarah Hokum tied for third. Rebecca Cox in her first, second Worlds, taking fifth place.
Mm-hmm.
Great performance of her, and she was battling a shoulder injury part of the week, so hats off to her. She shot her career best round, the first round. Paige Bierkus's second round was her career best. Someone else shot a career best round. We'll talk about that later. and then, so sixth place, tied for sixth, Katrina Allen and Zoe Andyke. Eighth place, Kristin Tatar from Estonia in her first Worlds. She actually shot an 893 rated fourth round. I think if she would have done a little better there, we would have been talking about her in the mix a little more because she was solid most of the week.
Oh yeah,
and she's going to be someone to keep an eye on. She'll be touring. I believe she's going to be at Delaware this weekend, and then she's going to U.S. Women's. And so keep an eye on her. She's going to make some noise. Ninth place, Natalie Holokoi from Switzerland, and then tying for 10th, Madison Walker and Haley King. So, really strong performances across the board there, and then. Let's check out the rest of the MPO top 10. So we talked about Macbeth and Josh Anthon time for second after Barsby's first place showing, for which he won $10,000.
Woo!
Nice. Paul Ulberry came in fourth, 38 under par. Matt Oram, fifth place. That guy, we're going to talk about him in just a minute. Seppo Paju and James Conrad tied for sixth at 34 under. Kale Aviska, eighth place with 33 under. Kevin Jones, Cameron Kolglaser, and Ricky Wysocki tied for ninth at 30 under. No one in 10th, but we did have a couple people tied for 12th. Chris Dickerson and Andrew Presnell at 29 under. So a couple other takeaways from this week, Sarah. It was the James Conrad show most of the week. That dude was on lead or chase the entire time.
Yeah.
Hit some huge putts round four at Brewster Ridge to get back on the lead card. Struggled a bit in the final round, but I think he has shown between this and his MVP open performance and various other performances that he is not to be taken lightly.
Yeah, I agree.
Matt Oram, like fifth place. This guy, he's got so many top tens at Worlds now, it's not even funny.
How many does he have?
A lot. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. I'd have to go back and look. It's on my phone. He has more, at least five, if not more.
Wow.
He tied for second at Worlds in 2005 with Barry Schultz. He's got
2005.
Third... Yeah, he's been playing forever. So
how old? There's no way that he's that
30.
Much older than
he's
me.
He's 30.
What?
Yeah. He's
30. Okay, so in 2005, that was 13 years ago.
He's a youngin.
So he was 17, and he tied Barry Schultz at Worlds.
Yes.
That's amazing. I can't believe I just
let
did
me
that
pull
math.
Up. Let me also pull up my list real quick because I want to confirm.
Okay.
Here we go. I got my list. All right. Yeah, he's 30. He does turn 31 in November, so he, you know, he's getting there.
What's his birthday?
I can't tell you that on the air, Sarah.
I didn't ask you for his address or phone number or anything.
I don't know. Still.
I don't know.
It's in November. 2005, tied Barry Schultz for second. So 2006, ninth. 2008, fourth. 2009, third. 2012, ninth, 13, ninth, 15, 10th, 16, ninth, and this year, fifth. He is planning on going on tour more next year. He's got a good deal from his sponsor now, and he is going to be hitting the road a little more. I'm excited about that. I had a lot of fun watching him play.
He's got kind of a different style.
It's unorthodox for sure, but it's fun to watch. And he's just like super chill, Roll Tide, Southern guy. I love it.
We actually cross paths a lot. I'm used to seeing his name up there on the leaderboard.
Of course.
If I ever go down and play like Birmingham events, I don't think he was at Music City Open this year, but he was probably playing in a different event. But yeah, we've crossed paths a lot in the South, and he's usually has a fan club out there rooting for him. So,
he's got a really unique style too. Like he's usually wearing like the Bear Bryant like fedora, or this week he's wearing like the
bandana.
He'll go with the houndstooth or something. Something that stands out. So, Sarah, with that in mind, and listing, I kind of gave it away listing all those finishes for him, but I want to ask you, like, more surprising performance this week, Matt Oram coming in fifth or Simon Lazat coming in 25th?
I'm going to have to go, now that I know all of that information that I did not know before, I'm going to go with Simon coming in 25th.
Yeah.
It's more surprising. Is that what you were thinking?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I expected Simon to play a lot better at this event. I think I talked to him briefly on Sunday when I ran into him, and he said he was just missing by this much, he said.
Like OB, trees, both?
Probably both. He finished on the upswing. He went 10-31, 10-44 to finish. But And then, a little bit of struggles there. Okay, so other surprising performances, Sarah. We had Eagle McMahon coming in 39th or Nate Perkins coming in 14th. Which one surprises you more there?
Eagle coming in 39th because we talked about this, and I felt like he was going to overcome this.
Man, I really did.
Mentally.
I really did too.
I was just hoping he would. Yeah.
I was too. And I saw him in round one. I think he was on near the end of the day, one of the cards, and he was coming down to hole 18, which we've talked about how much drama there is on this one. And the other part with hole 18 is that the green is sloped, and you can very easily, if you blow by your putt, roll away and go OB. And he did exactly that and then missed the comeback putt. And so I think that took him from like 9 down to 7 down. But granted, this is day one. This is the first round of the World Championships of a 5-round tournament.
Yeah.
He took off his hat, threw it to the ground, and was like yelling. And when I saw that, I kind of knew it was over for him. Like, I know that sounds terrible, but like, I hadn't seen Eagle do that in a while. Like, he'd been really composed the whole season when things hadn't gone his way. I think it was just he just had that mental block, like we talked about coming in, knowing that he hadn't performed well at this tournament. And I think it was a hurdle for him to get over that he just didn't do. I talked to his dad, Pat, on Sunday, kind of walking down the fairways, and he said, he's figured it out now. Like he's not going to let this course kind of define him. So yes, he didn't do well at Worlds, but he doesn't feel like it's going to impact him for the rest of the season. Honestly, I could see him bouncing back pretty well at Delaware this week. It's a long course. Big wide fairways, at least some wide fairways. I shouldn't say big wide fairways, but
yeah, it's just weird to me because these courses at Worlds were not that much different than courses that have been played throughout the year. It's totally
I know, like Fox Run reminds me of Conopiste, but with some OB.
And the other, and Brewster Ridge is just like a pretty straightforward wooded course. Like you don't have any luck holes. I thought that every hole is very wooded, but every fairway was wide, and there's obvious landing places and obvious fairways and things like that. So I don't know. Poor Eagle.
Yeah. But also Nate Perkins coming in 14th, like he was on the chase card the final round. And I was impressed with that. He was really locked in the last day at Brewster Ridge. I think going into Fox Run, it doesn't suit his style as well. I know he struggled quite a bit. We were talking about it off the air. He struggled quite a bit in the beginning, but I really like seeing a guy like him get up there, like making the most of the wooded side of the event and scrapping through at the open side to
Yeah.
You know, to come in 14th place at Worlds is nothing to shake a stick at. I mean, he tied with Nicola Castro.
Yeah.
He performed better than guys like Philo Brathwaite and Nate Sexton and his own teammates, Simon Lazat and Eagle McMahon, you know. So glad to see him up there doing that. Anything else that really stood out to you, Sarah, before we go to our interviews?
Well, funny enough, Ricky Wysocki, my pick, tied for ninth, and Chris Dickerson, who was my pick for top five, finished just behind him at tied for 12th. So yeah, Ricky was quite a surprise for
it was.
Me, but
yeah, you were there with me. We saw him at Fall Fest on Saturday night,
yeah.
And it was cool. We kind of stood there and watched fireworks with him, but like,
yeah,
he was bummed, man. I just asked him how he was doing. He's like, not good.
Yeah,
that was pretty much all
he
said.
Yeah, so that was Saturday night. The night
right.
before, he was out there. So Disc Golf Pro Tour had all of their circusy disc golf games and stuff, and he was out there doing like the basket pyramid putting contest,
yeah.
And everyone was watching him. And I was like, that's pretty cool. He can like blow off some steam and come out and like just be silly. So
yeah, you got to be able to you know, separate the two, but.
Yeah.
I know he was disappointed. It'll be interesting to see how he bounces back. It's been, for him and Paige Pierce, it's been kind of an inconsistent season, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, so before we go to the interviews,
yeah.
I had a note about Paige Pierce, and I just want to get your thoughts about this. So, obviously, after about the third or fourth round, Paige Bjorkus kind of, I would say, had it in the bag unless she made some major mistakes.
Which she did early in the fourth round, but yes, go ahead.
Yeah. And obviously Dynamic Discs is they call themselves a family. They're always there supporting each other out in the course, following each other's cards, all that. And the media people were there. Like, everyone was kind of rallying around Paige Bjorkus at this point, I'm assuming. Definitely during the fifth round, and I'm assuming during the fourth round too. And I wonder if that had any effect on Paige Pierce, because I know I play better when I've got a cheerleader. Like, I don't even need a caddy, like someone carrying my equipment. It's really nice to have someone who's watching my shot and very engaged and cheering for me and can kind of like commiserate with me if I make a bad shot. It's just like, oh, keep your head up, that kind of stuff. And I wonder if she's so used to, Paige Pierce is so used to everyone being behind her, and that kind of switched the focus to Paige Bjorkus the second half of the week, or maybe the entire week. I don't know, because I wasn't playing on her car.
I mean, I don't know. I would say this, like, in the times I was out there, I would say they did a really good job of spreading the wealth. And even, like, Robert McCall, their team manager, was out there. He was doing the Smashbox commentary and things like that. I mean, he was cheering on everyone. Like, Rebecca Cox would make a good shot. He's not on their team, and he would
yeah.
pick her up. So I didn't really think that was an issue. I think they were pumping up everyone, and honestly, like, they have the same name. So, you know, maybe.
Yeah, you could be like, go Paige.
Yeah, right? No, it's I don't really think that was an issue. I mean, you look at the fourth round, Paige Pierce shot a 10-10. Like,
true.
She was putting it down and the whole time. I don't know that that's really... I didn't really get the sense. I mean, I almost got the sense more that, like, a lot of them on the team who are out there were torn. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, I'm sure.
They were supporting both of them, but it's like,
yeah.
That's a hard position to be in. And I mean, even even if you want to go over the MPO side, like, you had three out of the four guys on the league card were Innova guys, you know?
Yep,
so it's like,
that's true.
It's one of those interesting things about like where the sport's at now and sponsorships and team management. We don't really dive into that too much on this show, but like, it's definitely, I mean, it can cause some, I don't know, not friction's not the word. It doesn't cause friction, but I definitely think it can cause some like some emotions that people need to get through. But I didn't get the sense that it was affecting.
Okay,
Paige Pierce
good.
So much. I got the sense more that it was just like she just couldn't put it together consistently. It was just like she pushed and pushed and pushed, and even when she pushed, like, Paige Pierce answered her. Like, Paige Pierce on hole four, final round, tried to go for an eagle, missed the putt, and so was set with an easy three, and Paige Pierce had something from like 30, or Paige Bierkes had something from 30 feet to hit for a birdie to match her, and she did.
Yeah.
So, I mean, she answered the call. It was, it was fun to watch. Something else to note, Katrina Allen finished on the upswing, 985 final round to move into six. She really looked like she was struggling early. I guess we should do the hot rounds real fast, and then we'll go to interviews.
Let's do that.
So why don't we start on the FPO side, since we're talking FPO. All of these, there was one that did not come from Worlds, but most of them from Worlds. And we've mentioned a couple of them already, but we will say them again. New world champion Paige Bierkes with her second round at Brewster Ridge, 10-21 rated, was the hottest round of the weekend. I had the privilege of like being right there and interviewing her when someone like shouted out from the side that it was 10-21, and that was her best round ever. And she just kind of was like, oh my gosh, she couldn't believe it. Like, she like,
wait, was that Brewster? That was Fox Run, right? Yeah. Fox Run.
Was it Fox?
Is that what you said? Yeah, because our first round we played Brewster.
No, you're right. Okay.
Yeah.
It was a blur of a week. But anyway, yeah. 10-21 okay. at Fox Run. Thank you. And she just like doubled over with excitement. It was crazy.
Yeah.
So that was really kind of a special moment to be there for that. Paige Pierce, her second round. No, I'm sorry. Her fourth round at Fox Run. 10-10 rated. She came in second place. And then the third hottest round of the weekend, 999 rated showing at Brewster Ridge, comes from the one and only Sarah Lamerson.
I told you I'd make the hot round someday.
Hey, you know what? Good time to do it at Worlds. And that's the highest rated round you've ever shot, yes?
Oh, by far. I think before that, it might have been Pittsburgh Worlds, and I think it was like somewhere in the 940s.
And you had really struggled at Brewster the first day, right? It was like a 16-shot difference?
Yes. So the first, and we talked about this on the little Smashbox segment, but, and if you listen to last week's episode, I was sick. I was feeling pretty under the weather, and I didn't get out on the course as much as I had planned to, because I was like, you know, it's better to feel good throughout the week when I'm competing. So I kind of took it easy on the practice side. And I wish I got one more practice round out there. But yeah, I cleaned up by 16 strokes. And that's with a 5 on the island hole, which is like extremely straightforward. And I even tried to play it super safe by throwing a mid-range. And I took a 5. So if I had just parred that hole, it would have been 18 strokes different. So I'm kicking myself for that.
Well, it gives you a chance to get 1,000 rated round this weekend at Delaware.
Hopefully, that's the plan. Yeah,
there you go. I mean, pretty interesting. Like, Brewster Ridge has yielded some, or I mean, not Brewster Ridge, but just Smuggler's Notch in general has yielded some hot rounds. Like, over the last couple years, I think there were 3,000 rated rounds last year, like two the year before. So it's it yields some scoring. So congratulations, Sarah. You came in a 19th place tie with Ellen Whitboom. Hit the cash. Good to go, right?
Yep.
Awesome. Yeah. So congratulations.
Thank you.
On making the hot rounds and a strong finish at Worlds. Coming in fourth in the hot rounds was Rebecca Cox. Her opening round at Brewster Ridge, she shot a 992 to take the lead. That was the best round of her career as well. She ended up finishing in fifth place. Really, really great to see a couple of new faces at the top of the leaderboard the whole week. I think this is just all positives for the FPO field.
For sure.
And then the last hot rated round of the week, we had three people with a 985. Jessica Weiss, Katrina Allen at Worlds, and then Henna Blomroos out at the Nokia Open in Finland. Henna won her event with her 985 rated round. And Weiss and Katrina Allen came in third, tied for third and tied for sixth, respectively, at Worlds. So,
correction, Henna actually came in second.
Oh, sorry, I was reading the wrong one. It was her first round, and she came in second.
I saw that too, and I was like, what? She shoots a 985 and comes in second?
Wow, who won that event?
Evelina, I believe.
Probably, yeah. That would be my guess, too. It was really cool. I talked to Kristen Tatar from Estonia, you know, just kind of asking her, what would it mean to you to bring home a strong showing at Worlds? I think at that point, she was on going into being on the lead card. I was like, you know, if you bring home a top 5 at Worlds, what's that mean? She's like, it would be great for just European disc golf in general, and like, we have some strong women's players out there, and we really need to get them over here for Worlds. Much like we've been saying for a long time, Sarah. So
Yeah.
I'm glad Kristen Tatar is also on board with us.
Definitely.
So awesome. Let's hear the MPO hot rounds. What do we got?
All right. We have a lot of ties. So, wow. The most ties I think we've ever had. So Paul Ulibarri actually had the hottest round at Worlds, his second round. So that was Brewster Ridge.
That was Brewster, yep.
Yep. He shot a 1090. So that's pretty amazing. His and he finished fourth. So congratulations, Paul. Another Paul, Paul McBeth, shot the second highest rated round with a 1082. His second round, same.
So that was also
same round.
Brewster,
so Brewster,
yeah.
Yep, he tied for second. The next hottest rated round was Nate Perkins. He shot a 1078, his fourth round, and like we said, tied for 14th. So then we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people all tied at 1074 for their hottest rated round. And James Conrad, I won't go through. Well, okay. So James Conrad, his second round, and he tied for 6th. Calvin Heimberg, his first round, he tied for 16th. Andrew Presnell, his second round, tied for 12th. Yale Storr, did I say that right?
Yes.
Okay, sweet. He's shot, that was his second round. He tied for 26.
He may have aced, I believe he aced that round too.
Oh, that was what, hole 14?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that, yeah, awesome. And then Greg Barsby, your new world champion, he shot a, yep, the 1024, his second round, and finished first.
1074.
So congratulations. 1074.
That's when he really jumped in lead and he took it home from there.
Yeah. And then the fifth hottest rated round was 1067, and there was a 5-way tie for that. This is crazy. And that was Josh Anton, his third round, he tied for second. Cameron Kohlglaser, his fifth round in the finals, and he tied for 9th. Kevin Jones, also
Kevin
in the
Jones.
Finals. Yep, and he tied with Cameron. Matt Oram, his third round, he tied for 5th. And last but not least, Nate Sexton, his first round, and he ended up being tied for 21st.
Kevin Jones, new world distance champion as well.
Oh, yes. That's right.
By like 3 feet on his last
throw.
It was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So, man, a lot of fun at Worlds, Sarah. I'm sure we could probably talk for hours about Worlds, but then people might fall asleep. So here's what we're going to do. Let's take a break, and we're going to go back-to-back on the interviews. We're going to have Greg Barsby. We're going to have Paige Bierkes. Then we'll come back, and we will talk about the Delaware Disc Golf Challenge because the disc golf never stops, Sarah, and we've got the national tour this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready?
I am so ready.
Good, because you're there, and you better be because you're playing, right?
I
guess we should talk about the Canadian championships a little bit as well. So,
oh, yeah, definitely.
All right, so we're going to be back with the new world champions, and we'll get back with you here in just a little bit on PDJ Radio. Welcome back to the show, and joining us for the first time as world champion is 2018 PDJ world champion Greg Barsby. Greg, have you gotten used to how that sounds yet?
No, I haven't. I don't think, I don't know if I'll ever get used to it, but it's pretty good ring to it.
Yeah, man. Congratulations. Thanks for taking some time to be on the show. I know you're still on the road heading down to Delaware from Vermont, but, you know, what's the last couple days been like for you? I'm sure there was a big celebration. I'm sure it's been a little bit of a blur, but, you know, for people listening at home, what, try and describe what the last couple days since Worlds have been like for you.
Last couple days were great. I just went up to Burlington in Vermont and just kind of hung out at my friend Evan's place, just decompressed from the week and really just, you know, laid low. Just trying to soak in all the love and get back to a lot of messages. It's been pretty overwhelming, so feels really good to have all that support and just, yeah, hanging out. Nothing too big on the celebration. I mean, went and hung out with Innova guys on Sunday night, and yeah, it's just been pretty low key. Monday was definitely an interesting day. I felt like it was in an alternate reality for most of the day. So it's starting to set in today, I think.
What's out of all the messages and, you know, congratulations you've got, Have there been any from anyone that have really like surprised you or have really made you say, wow, like I can't believe that person was paying attention, or just someone who you've looked up to who congratulated you, something like that? Anything that's really stuck out?
Yeah, there's a few. I mean, obviously, you know, the guys back home who I've played with for years and years, calling me up, like Mike Loya and Jay Bear and those guys. I got a phone call from Brad Hammack, got a phone call from Jim Oates.
Wow.
Got a phone call from Ken Climo. That was pretty amazing.
Yeah, man. That's great.
Yeah.
How's the conversation with Climo go?
We just talked about the golf. You know, just talking about how the shot making, you know, just like certain times of the round that, you know, you make a big shot and that's really sometimes what it can be. And, you know, also, you know, kind of getting a couple of good breaks here and there when I needed them the most. And just, yeah, talk to him about that. Just life and stuff. You know, I told him that, you know, a bunch of people miss him playing golf and wished him well in his recovery. I know he's been battling a hip issue. And so, yeah, just told him that we need to get him back out there. We need to get him over to Europe.
Speaking of the golf, I think back to this tournament. Obviously, it's five rounds, ton of holes, ton of moments, but I think of a few really big turning points that I kind of wanted to ask you about. I mean, we got to talk in the kind of the post-game interview, but that was such a blur. I've got like a million more questions about the actual golf that I want to ask you. So,
sure.
A big moment, at least for me being there, felt like hole 18 during round three. You and Paul McBeth, Paul Ulibarri had been battling the whole round. You guys all go into that hole tied. Both those guys go OB. You pure your shot. And I believe you took a birdie on that hole, right?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, the third round I was right in the middle.
Right,
remember,
exactly.
I was right in the middle of the fairway. I almost want to be on the left side a little bit more, so had a kind of a decision to make and made the right choice. Played something overstable to the left side of the tree and snuck up there pretty close.
How important was that sequence? Those guys going out of bounds, you keeping it in, playing the hole properly. Like, how important in hindsight do you feel like that was to the event as a whole? Did it feel like a turning point for you?
Well, I think I've seen Paul make almost every single 45-footer with, like, complete, you know, madness behind the basket. So I really expected him to make that putt. But he was telling me, we talked after the round, and he had his putters were kind of going astray on him or whatever. They're, you know, like a piece of plastic had, you know, fell off his main putter, and he wasn't liking the way that it was flying. I think, you know, through the round, he had a couple short putts that I don't ever expect him to. I always expect him to convert that.
Sure.
So it was interesting to me. And then when he told me that, it made more sense. But yeah, that was a huge turning point just because, yeah, we were all really close. I think I got the lead after that point and had to sleep on the lead. And, you know, but yeah, that, I mean, they're all really important. It's so funny. You think back to the whole thing, and all of them are obviously, they all count as one. So I don't know if any one in particular was more important, but that was definitely a big sequence as far as separation, you know, to get the birdie. I stuck to the game plan, executed it. So that was a big one for sure.
And then another one that kind of stuck out to me was early during the final round. You know, I'd seen you on the tee. You were nice enough to let me listen to what was blasting out your eardrums. And it was great. And, you know, you play hole one well, and then hole two, you scuffle a little bit, you get to the edge of the circle, and you miss the putt. And I noticed at that point, you started, it looked like from a distance, you were getting down on yourself a little bit. You kind of took your hat off, you were chastising yourself a little bit. And I mean, I've seen over the last couple of years, I know you're a positive guy, but I also know, you know, you're an emotional player. I've seen a couple times, like at I think back to like Worlds last year, the first round at Fort Gordon where you're on the chase card. I remember some emotions getting you there. Last year, maybe at USDGC, you had a horrible, like just ridiculously painful roll away on 17. I remember that one really getting to you. And so I admit, like, I saw your reaction there on hole two after you missed that putt, and I was a little nervous. I was a little worried that the emotions were going to get to you. So I'm wondering then, and then even on hole three after that, if I recall, your drive was a little high, kind of clipped early. So, I mean, how did you get over that? How did you not let those emotions that have gotten to you before get to you in that moment?
That's a good question. And I've just been trying to, you know, mentally stay within myself and not let some of the, you know, the frustrations of playing, and, you know, because you go through the ups and downs of the throws, and there's good ones and there's bad ones, and just try not to let any of them get in there too deep to where I really start to feel like uneasy or, you know, really mad per se. You know, I think it's okay to be frustrated and have to go through that, but there's also a point where you got to be able to let go and separate. So I just try to do my best to do that, especially after three. I think Josh had taken the lead at that point, and Josh is full on pedal to the metal player the whole time. I know he's not going to give me an inch out there. So I think the drive on four was one of the most essential shots of my tournament, just getting that in bounds. That was a hole that I didn't really have a 100% game plan on before I even started the Worlds, and I decided I'm going to play that sidearm out over the OB and play it back in. And that one landed in bounds, and then made a putt on that hole. And hole five, I birdied hole five every round, which I think is the monumental boost to winning the event. That's such a tricky hole. You got to play it down the hill. It can't be too high. It can't hyzer off too far. It's got to hit the gap. And there, you know, typically there's a lot of wind coming up of that hill. There wasn't too much wind, but, you know, making a big shot there and like keeping the, you know, just keeping the cog moving. They got another birdie. I'm like, okay, all right, I'm in this thing. You know, I come up to hole six, and that's a pretty cake sidearm for me. And I was surprised that Josh threw his putter there. That was the first, you know, real mistake that I think he made that round. And I was really, really surprised. And that kind of pulled it back in my favor.
Okay. And then hole 11, you hit that, you bang from like 60 feet or something like that. That seemed to be another one of those big momentum shifts, right?
Big time. Yeah, I couldn't believe I didn't get it up there. I was like, oh, what's my disc doing all the way up here? I had to make an adjustment on the feet to pop the thing up and get it in between the trees. And then get it down quick enough to get into the basket. That was a really tricky putt.
You hit a lot of big ones this tournament. Like, which one of those big putts was your favorite? Was it that one? Just because of how late in the game it was? Was there any other big ones that stuck out to you?
Yeah, that one was huge. I made a putt the second round when I was playing with Ricky after catching a pretty fortunate break. I got it to like 85 feet on hole 12. After pulling it to the right and then bagged one from 85. And then, of course, Ricky followed it up with an 80-footer. You know, like 5 feet in front of me. And I'm like, okay, here we go. So, yeah, you know, obviously those putts landed. The two toss-ins I had the first round were also pretty key to just keeping my, you know, my spirit in the game and not giving the guys too much right off the bat. And Calvin had me by three after the first round. You know, three out there could fly around really quickly, so I never really felt like I was out of the game.
Sure.
You know, I stayed close, and those two back-to-back were monumental.
So going back to the final round, I think you had one on Josh going into 17. And he's up on the tee before you. He throws. And at first it seems like that shot's in bounds. The crowd kind of cheers a little bit, and then all of a sudden you hear the big, like, build-up of this groan that everyone lets you know that it went OB. What's going on in your head at that moment? Is that a chance for you to breathe? Are you telling yourself you have to execute? Are you feeling bad for Josh? Like, what's going on in your mind right then on the tee pad there?
Kind of all three. You know, obviously, anytime you can get a stroke on your nearest competitor, or, you know, maybe he goes out of bounds and has to add a stroke to his score, that, you know, obviously gives you a better chance to get maybe a number on him. But I knew I've been throwing 17 well, and you know, just tried to block all that out and just hit this shot like I've been hitting it all week. I've been throwing it nice and high so it digs. And yeah, just, you know, really unfortunate break for Josh. It does a terrible roll away. Once I watched the video, I saw how big of a skip it took, and I don't know how many discs I really saw take a skip like that. So really unfortunate for him. And you know, thank goodness I finally clutched in a 24-footer or whatever.
Yeah. And I mean, so,
that was pretty crazy.
I'm sure there's been plenty of times over the years where you have like played in your head what you thought it would be like to win a world championship, to celebrate it, to tap in that final putt. Did it live up to that?
Yeah, it did. It's funny, you know, before the game, you know, it's just all about, you know, visualizing what you think you can do and just putting that out there, really just sending that energy out. And, you know, I was thinking before the round, boy, it'd be great to lay up for the win. but yeah, it was every bit and more, you know. It's like when, you know, and the dream that you've been going for a long time kind of just starts to set in, everything. It is like concrete setting, you know, still for the last couple of days, you know, just everything's still forming around this idea of what just happened. So yeah, that was a pretty cool moment. You know, when Paul came up and gave me a hug, I'm like, what's happening? What's going on? You know, I'm like somebody guide me where I'm supposed to go.
Well, they all picked you up and carried you there, right?
Not to the green, but after for sure. That was pretty cool. Pretty awesome.
That was amazing.
Bell and David and Ricky, you know, Ricky coming up and giving me a hug. I mean, a whole lot, you know, those guys are all so good. You know, we all travel across the world and do this thing. So really cool to have that camaraderie with the guys, and, you know, all the top players, especially at this event. You know, if it was anybody's game going into that last round, I was able to kind of just suppress the energy and keep it in my court.
Now, we talked briefly yesterday trying to get this interview set up, and you mentioned that, you know, there's some responsibilities now that are coming with this being a world champion and all that. What do you see as those responsibilities? You know, what are you mentally preparing for now as a world champion?
I don't know. I suppose, you know, they all come, you know, with each step that you take. You know, just going to try to take this as a learning experience, an opportunity to grow as a person. You know, to represent the game, to have that, to have the honor and the title of being the guy, you know, really, I guess, you know, just gives me an opportunity to grow and to learn and be able to just be a great ambassador for the sport and try to do it in my own unique way. And, you know, the way that I would do it, I get the opportunity to kind of write that chapter. So, yeah.
Well, it's going to be fun to watch, and it was fun to watch this week, man. So thank you for putting on a show. It was a pleasure, and again, congratulations.
Thanks so much, man. Yeah, nope. I'm honored and ready to go to the next one. Philo and I are going to meet up in about a half hour, and we're on down to Delaware. Should be a good time.
All right, man. Well, good luck. Thanks for joining us. Again, that was 2018 PDGA World Champion Greg Barsby. And we'll be right back here in just a moment on PDGA Radio. All right, we had her on the show earlier this year, but that was before she was a PDGA World Champion. So welcome back to the show, 2018 PDGA World Champion, Paige Bierkus. How are you doing today, Paige?
I am great. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. Have you gotten used to hearing that that title in front of your name yet?
Yeah, every time someone addresses me since then, it's always been world champion. Like, hey, world champion, Paige Bierkus. I'm like, oh, hey, what's up?
it's
pretty awesome.
I was going to say, has it really, it's been a few days. I asked Greg Barsby this earlier, but I mean, has it really sunk in yet?
Not quite. not quite. It's still surreal. Still trying to soak it all in, but yeah, not quite.
Now, one of the things that, I mean, the common sentiment seemed to be that you were always going to get here. Like, everyone, especially with how you've been playing recently, everyone knew you were going to break through for a big, big victory. But I don't think anyone, and I don't even know if you yourself, thought it was going to be at Worlds. Did you surprise yourself this week?
Absolutely. My goal coming into the week was top five. My best finish at a previous Worlds was ninth, and that was in 2016. I knew I'd been playing well, so I thought top five was a pretty realistic goal. But I did not expect to shoot a 10-20 rated round, and I did not expect to have such a lead after the second round, and to kind of maintain that throughout the tournament was definitely not something I expected, but I was definitely stoked with the outcome.
Can you describe what kind of mental, what kind of mental fortitude it took to hold the lead for that long? I mean, to me, it seems like it would just be exhausting.
For me, any tournament is mentally exhausting. Just because, you know, every shot matters, every stroke matters, every putt matters. And so, whether it was Worlds or a different tournament, I mean, it is exhausting. But, yeah, I mean, I think having that lead was maybe less exhausting than having to worry about catching up, you know? Like, crap, I have strokes to make up. I have to play well. But, you know, with me having that lead, I was able to just stick to my game plan and play safe to where I knew that if I was going to be beat, they were going to be the ones that would have to play well and have to shoot really, you know, under par, or have a 1,000 rated round to catch me. So,
okay. What do you think has made the difference in your recent play? Is it just a matter of that you've actually been able to be out on the road and do it more consistently, or is there something else that started to click for you?
No, I just think it's just playing as so much. I mean, my tour started back in Masters Cup, so early May, and I maybe have had like 4 weekends off since then, kind of scattered throughout my time. And so I just think playing so much and practicing so much, and like leading up to Worlds, like the tournaments before, we would practice, you know, 2 rounds a day almost at almost all the tournaments. So I just think it's the repetition and gaining the confidence in my shots. You know, just because it's Worlds, it doesn't mean, I feel like it's not that different from other tournaments. You know, at other courses, you're going to need a hyzer. At other courses, you're going to need a straight shot, you know, and any course, you're going to have to make a 30-foot putt. So, I just think, you know, just practicing and throwing so many shots, you know, months leading up to Worlds, that's why I felt so confident.
You sound a lot older than a 21-year-old when you talk like that.
thanks.
I mean, it sounds like you have a much more mature outlook in terms on the game. I mean, is that something that just has come from playing for so long, or is that kind of your demeanor in general? Like, are you able to kind of take things as they come, like in daily life, and handle them better?
Probably both. Definitely, I competed in my first disc golf tournament when I was 10 years old, so I've been doing it for quite a long time. So just having the experience, and I've experienced, you know, wins and losses, and, you know, coming close and losing leads and losing tournaments. So I just think it's the experience. But I mean, I am pretty go with the flow with when it comes to anything in life. But I would say for this particular, you know, this particular moment in time, it's just the experience, and you know, looking up to so many people that have the same, you know, thoughts and feelings about disc golf. So,
speaking of looking up to people, I know you've mentioned so much how much you've looked up to Paige Pierce. She told me a really cool story, and I kind of want to hear your side of it. She told me that earlier this summer you guys were doing a signing session at the DD store, and that she asked you for your autograph and to put one time by it on a trading card, and that so she technically has the first Paige Bierkus one-time world champion signature.
Yep. Yeah, we were at Junior Worlds. DD made runs of trading cards for the pros that were going to be there, and I was there to work. And I helped TD one of the courses. And so it was crazy at the store. And, you know, at that time I'd been playing super well, and she came up to me and she's like, sign this one time for me. And I'm like, what? Why? She goes, you're going to win one. It's going to be sometime soon. And I was like, okay, sweet. Thanks. And so I signed it for her, and I think she's kept it for since then. So yeah, that was super awesome. That's crazy that she, like, what, a month or two before I won, she asked me to do that.
Right. I don't know if she thought it was going to come that soon, right?
I know. I didn't think it was going to come that soon.
So looking at the tournament a little more, you know, there's always some moments, in, especially these long tournaments, where you have to really, like, dig deep. And I think back to, like, round four, those first three holes, where you had that five-stroke lead over Hokum, and in the blink of an eye, they're gone over the first few holes. You know, what was the most important part for you to be able to really bounce back from that and, you know, not let the wheels entirely come off after the early struggles that round?
Oh yeah, that was so rough. Gosh, that was super hard to swallow. And I think what helped me get through it is that, you know, it's never too late to have a good round. That's something my parents have taught me, and Paige Pierce, just, you know, you can bogey this hole, but you can always birdie the next one. You can birdie the next 10, you can birdie the next 15, you know, however late in the round it is. And just knowing that that's possible. Like at Vibram, the round where I shot incredibly well, I had all those birdies. I started off with like four bogeys in a row, but I ended up having like the best, one of the best rounds in the FPO field. And it's just knowing that it's legitimately never too late to have a good round, you know. And I ended up shooting even the rest of that round. I mean, I shot five over altogether, but I was five over through three holes and ended up shooting five over total. So, just knowing that it's never too late, and, you know, bad holes happen, bad luck happens to everybody. And just kind of keeping my head up, and it, you know, a few holes later, bad holes happen to Hokum, you know. And so it's just being able to just stay positive and know that there's plenty of golf left. That really helped me.
And then I know I asked you about this in kind of the post round interview, but looking at hole seven and how well you played that, you played it to par every round. Paige Pierce, I think, ended up taking a total of seven strokes over par on that hole. Really, that hole was pretty consequential in the scope of the whole tournament. I'm curious for you. Did you think going into the tournament that hole would be such a deal breaker?
Nope. Not really. If anything, I thought, you know, Paige would probably get a stroke on me maybe not every round, but I thought, well, since she has that distance, she's probably going to have easier birdie putts than I would. But that's the most I thought about that hole. Other than that, my goal on that hole was to just stay in bounds. You know, if I stay in bounds, I'm probably going to get a par. So I had no idea that was going to basically win me the entire tournament. So yeah, that was just a big surprise. I would have bet Paige would have gained strokes on me on that hole for sure. I think everybody probably thought that because it's such a far hole.
What was the celebration like? What'd you end up doing that night and the next couple days to kind of commemorate your new world championship?
Really not much. After the award ceremony, everyone had to go home or had to get ready for Delaware, and everyone kind of left. So even my parents had to leave that night. So I actually spent the next day kind of exploring Maine because I've never been there before. And then driving up to Delaware. So I haven't really done a big celebration yet, but I'm hoping sometime this weekend, since everybody's going to be together for the NT, I'm hoping to celebrate then. But, I mean, just kind of relaxing and enjoying, you know, the fact that I'm a world champion and kind of letting it all soak in has been, you know, celebratory enough, I think.
have you gotten to dial in the signature disc plans yet, or is it still too early in the game for that?
No, actually, I did. I talked to Robert McCall on the phone today. So it looks like my signature disc, that will be like the stock stamp, is going to be the Fusion Judge. Basically, the judge won me the tournament. I mean, I used it to stay on the fairways at Brewster and on some of those really hard par fours at box run. I use my putter to lay up, you know, get over the inbounds, pitch up to the basket, and have a pretty easy tap and par. So I think I decided to go with that. And I think a lot of people don't realize how important it is to have, you know, a good throwing putter in your bag. And I'm hoping that with my name on the disc, it'll sell more and people will realize its importance and probably some like promotional videos and stuff for it. But that's going to be like the signature disc with my, like, where the stock stamp has my signature on it. But then I think next year we're going to do a Lucid X getaway as kind of the one for just 2019.
Very nice. Now, okay, so real quick, speaking of your name and your signature, is your middle name really Muggs?
Yeah, I have two middle names, Muggs Marie, and there's a hyphen in between them, so it's Paige Muggs Marie Bierkes. So
okay, where?
Yeah, my great.
I need the backstory.
Yeah, my great grandma's name was Margaret, and I guess that was her nickname. I don't know where she came up with that nickname, but it's just been passed on. So yeah.
Very cool. All right, and then one last thing before I let you go. I mean, what's next for you? The big, you know, the big move you made was to skip the semester of school. I know you're taking online classes. I don't want that to get left out. But, you know, what's next for you now? Do you go back to school in the spring and try and do a late summer tour? Do you put off school longer, or have those big decisions not really been made yet?
I am, it's not 100%, but it's 99% I'm sure that I'm not going to go back to school in the spring, and I'm just going to keep touring. Some of my favorite tournaments are early spring, like the Memorial, and I haven't been able to play them since I got out of high school, just because, you know, missing a week of school in college is pretty hard. So I'm super excited to be able to go back on tour during the early times of the year, and you know, just play as much as I can. And I mean, now that I have a world championship, I know that I can constantly be up top with the top women. And it's been brought up before, I haven't won a national tour before, so that's kind of my next goal, is to win one of those, hopefully this weekend. But if not, you know, there's Hall of Fame and there's next year. But also U.S. Women's is in a couple weeks, so I'd like to try to win that one. So, yeah, I'm just trying to play as much disc golf as I can now. That's the plan.
Very nice. Well, it was a lot of fun to watch out in Vermont. The game plan was smart and consistent, and I expect that we're going to see some more of that, right?
Hopefully, yes.
Well, Paige, thank you again for taking time to chat today. That was Paige Bierkes, 2018. PDGA World Champion. Paige, we'll talk to you soon.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you. And we'll be back here in just a moment on PDGA Radio. All right. Thanks again to the new PDGA World Champions for taking some time to chat on the show. I'm sure it's been a bit of a whirlwind, I would imagine. So nice to be able to catch up. Sarah, this weekend, there's more disc golf. We have a new event on the PGA National Tour, the Delaware Disc Golf Challenge at Iron Hill Disc Golf Course in Newark, Delaware. Mm-hmm. And Sarah, this one, you got a little bit of a soft spot for this one. This is kind of, you've been playing this course for a while.
Yeah.
Have you played in the Delaware Disc Golf Challenge before, or have you just played at Iron Hill?
No, because let's see, I'm looking at the caddy book and they've got past winners on here, and it goes back to 2009. And That's right around when I started to play. So
you've never played the actual event itself. You've just played at the course.
The only event that I've ever played here was a mixed doubles event back in like probably 2009 or 2010 with Mike Mosier and whoever he was partnered with. And I was terrified because I was
Mike
a
Mosier
player.
Has been like the man at this course in the past.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah, there's some pretty big names on this wall of, trophies. Do you mind if I say a couple?
No, this is what I'm waiting for.
Okay, cool. So 2009. All right, so I'm going to go open men and open women champion starting in 2009. Mike Mosier and my friend Becky Sondheim. Nate Cron and Becky Sondheim. Steve Brinster. Heyo. And Kelly Boyce.
Okay.
2012, Tyler Horn. Sarah Hokum. Open men. 2013, open men Richard Wysocki.
Who's that?
And I know. And Hannah Leatherman.
Okay.
Miss seeing her out. 2014, Mike Mosier again, Paige Pierce, 2015, Dave Fellberg, Katrina Allen, 2016, Bradley Williams, Sarah Hokum, and then 2017, Andrew Fish and Hannah Leatherman. So
Hannah Leatherman, two-time.
Yeah, lots of big names on this list. So, the course is well-established, the event is well-established, it's just never been on the national tour before.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to checking it out. It's one of those ones, too, that there's, like, some footage out there on YouTube of, but not a ton. So, like, we've got Jomez out there this week. We've got the disc golf guy out there this week. We're going to have a newer media team called Gatekeeper Media, who's been doing a lot of stuff in the Philadelphia area, like Woods, things like that.
Ooh, I love Sedgley.
Yeah. So they're coming up. They're not going to be next day, but they'll be putting out footage. So there'll be a lot of places for people to go to get some Iron Hill footage in. We're also going to have our live scored on UDisc Live.
Sweet.
And yeah, it'll be fun. I'm excited. I'm not going to be at this one, unfortunately. Doing the back to back with Worlds was a lot, but the man Marty Gregoire will be there on the ground doing all the social media and everything like that. So it's going to be a blast. I'm really excited just to see how this course plays. Sarah, it is a par 72.
Yeah.
That is a beast of a course. Like, they call
it's a beast.
Beast in Nokia, but man.
Yeah. Okay, wait. So I should have done this before we started recording. But, you know, like, your typical disc golf course has, I would say, is mostly made up of par threes.
Oh, I know the breakdown. Do you need the breakdown?
Yes, give us the breakdown.
I got the breakdown because people were telling me this weekend and it was bananas. It is four par threes, four par fives, and 10 par fours.
That sounds right, yes.
So it's a
lot. Let that sink in for a second.
It's a lot, yeah. I was actually talking to Sean about this tournament and then a couple other people there. And yeah. I couldn't even believe it. It's 10,320 feet on the MPO side, 9,234 feet on the FPO side. Sarah, thank you for doing the legwork on the research.
Sure.
It looks like they all play the same tees, but some different baskets in certain
spots.
Yeah,
Yep. So we've got,
like,
seven
holes with different baskets.
Yeah, seven holes with different baskets, which I'm pretty excited about. Yeah, this is one of those courses that's fully in the woods, except for about two holes, I think.
I think the team today said, like, I would talk to Andrew Fish today. He said it was, like, the first three or four holes.
No, the first hole is definitely in the woods. It's, okay. Like, around hole three or four. Yeah, it's one of those courses that's, like, fully wooded. It's kind of like Brewster Ridge. It actually reminded me of each other. It's totally fair. Wide open, not wide open, as wide open and fair as you could get in the woods on
No fluky branches,
like clean and fair. The terrain is really pretty. There's lots of boulders and rocks and things.
What
the
are we talking about, like, fairways? Is there grass? Is it dirt? Is it hard packed? Is it soft? What do you got for me there?
Man,
granted, it's rained a lot this week, so it might be a little soppy.
Yeah, the last time I played it was probably 6 months ago now, maybe more recent than that. But if I can remember correctly, in the woods, it's mostly, like, hard-packed dirt.
Okay.
So could be some skippage action out there. That's a word. And, there's not as much elevation change. There's a couple holes, like, what is it? People are going to listen to this and be mad at me, but, like, hole 12, maybe? It's next to a back parking lot. There's one pin position that's in a tree. And it's like a straight downhill kind of tunnel shot. It's not that far. You could throw a mid-range. And I think I'd have to look at the caddy book, but I think we're playing the pin position that's up and to the left, that's away from the parking lot, hopefully. And then there's a couple. There's one really pretty hole. It's the signature hole where the basket is elevated up on a big, I don't know if it's a man-made dirt mound, but it's very large, and you take rock steps up to it. And I think there's actually a picture of it in the caddy book.
I talked to the TD today, Jimmy McElvain, and he basically said, like, they've done a lot there to really just put the course in the best shape possible, take care of the environment, erosion, things like that. It sounds like they put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. That guy has some major energy. He is pumped to have the event out there. Awesome. You know, he knows where it falls on the schedule in terms of it being, you know, right after Worlds. It's a little bit of a tough spot to be in. There's other majors coming up, but he's excited to have the course on display. I am too. I think it's going to be great. It sounds like it's just going to be super demanding. I believe the course record, I think it says it in the caddy books there, is it a 59 shared by Paul
Ricky
Ulibarri?
No,
believe it's Ulibarri and Bradley Williams.
I thought it was Ricky and Brad. Wait.
No, it's definitely Ulibarri.
It says it in here somewhere. I'm scrolling through. Oh, you're right. You're right.
Same year, I believe, Paul Ulibarri and Bradley Williams.
Yep. And in 2017, Hannah Leatherman shot a FPO gold course record at a 70.
Okay.
So that is the score to beat.
Yeah. I had a really good conversation today with Andrew Fish, who he's from Baltimore. He won the event last year. He plays there quite often. He's played there 4 or 5 years now. Mm-hmm. He's one of those guys. I think he's 1023 rated off the top of my head.
I'm looking.
Might be higher than that. Yeah, 1023 rated. So he's like the 11th or 12th highest rated player in the event. He is he's one of these guys who he's a really, really good regional pro, but he has a daytime job as an engineer for the county of Baltimore. And so he doesn't get out on tour all the time, but he could easily win this event. He won it last year. He comes from an ultimate background. He has, you know, he's good with touch shots. He knows how to kind of power down where he needs to and play his spots. He said there's really two ways you can kind of approach this course. You can play it the way he does, where it's like mids and fairways and just choose your landing zones and attack it that way. Mm-hmm. Or you can go with the big distance drivers and chop off a lot, but if you miss, you're going to miss bad.
Yep.
So it's going to be interesting to see. I wouldn't be surprised to see him put in a strong performance. I'm going to have an article about him coming out on the PDGA website this week. He's really intelligent, really a big champion of gender equity in disc sports and everything. So it was cool to talk to him today and get his take on both that and the event. I wouldn't be surprised to see him do pretty well this week. He's battling a bit of a cold like everyone else, it seems.
I know. I hope he does. I actually played. I think he's originally from Atlanta area, or at least
he went to Georgia Tech.
That's right. Yeah, because we met when we were both playing collegiate disc golf.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
So yeah, yeah. I hope he also has a good showing. I got to catch up with him a bit at World, so it was cool to see him out.
Yeah, I'm pumped to see what he does. He's actually going to be on one of the feature cards. If you want to go to PDGA.com, the tee times are already up. He's gonna be on the 2 p.m. tee time alongside Greg Barsby, Paul Ulibarri, and Ricky Wysocki. So that's pretty stacked. And then if you want to look at the women's, I guess we could take a look at the FBO cards there. There's a feature card that has, let's see here, Katrina Allen, Sarah Hokum, Paige Bierkus, and Sarah Lamberson. Yeah, we're gonna get some coverage.
Sweet.
I love it. You better go out and you gotta go show out now.
I'm gonna try. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
As always.
You've played
as always,
in front of cameras
no
before. Do you get nervous?
Not typically. I don't want to jinx myself, but I feel like I actually play better in front of, like I was talking about earlier that I feel like I play better when I've got a cheerleader. And for some reason cameras kind of do that for me. It like gives me it kind of makes sense. It like gives me a sense of importance. And I'm like, all right, well, there's some reason why this camera is following me and people may watch this in the future, and so I feel like I am more like performing for somebody, and so it gives me a little bit more purpose to play better.
Nice. Well, I'll be rooting for you from a distance, hoping that you get on the hot rounds again.
Cool.
It's gonna be fun. And then you're also helping with the putting clinic this week, right?
Yeah, Matt Bell, unfortunately, Double G and Jessica had to drop out of the event, but Matt Bell
out of the event entirely.
I believe so. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yep. She's not on the list anymore.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah. So Matt Bell and I who will be running a putting clinic tomorrow night, Thursday, and it's at Dew Point Brewing, and it's about 30 minutes north of the event, of Iron Hill. So,
all right. So if you're in the area, you can come out. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, is there anything else before we get to some picks, Sarah? What else do we really need to know? I think we talked coverage. We got Jomez and Disc Golf Guy and Gatekeeper.
Yeah.
What else you got?
That's about it. Yeah. Who's picking first this week?
I think
it's you.
I think it's me.
Yeah.
I think it's me. I mean, I don't even remember. I mean, I guess I did a little better on the world's picks. Neither I got Macbeth in second. Your winner didn't do it.
I know.
But hey, unpredictable worlds. Unpredictable worlds. So, and this event I'm having trouble predicting as well, just because I'm not really as familiar with the course. I think that the world's hangover is a real thing. So as much as I think Greg Barsby, it's great to have him on the lead card, I don't expect him to win this one. Knowing what I know about what you've told me with this course, Sarah, and talking to the TD today, he said he expects Paul Macbeth to come out and just destroy the place. But I'm not going to pick him because I always pick Paul Macbeth, and I like to pick other people. And
Worlds, and that's why you're losing. Did I say that?
Well, you know what?
I know. I'd rather lose and be happy. For several events, so.
I'd rather lose and be happy than win and rub it in your face. No, I don't.
Wait, speaking of that, I know we talked about this way early on, one of the first episodes, what was on the line for winning this little bet. And I am happy to say that even though we don't have the tally, Steve did deliver and he bought me some maple syrup while we were in Vermont. So
I paid up with some.
Thank you for that.
No problem. Well, I'm sorry I didn't buy more of it, but that tiny bottle was very expensive.
Very expensive. Okay. Anyway.
So, okay. After watching Worlds this week and after talking to him after the final round, I'm going a little bit. This is a little bit of a bold pick, I think.
Okay.
I'm going to take Seppo Paayu.
Mm.
I think with the fairways being a little more open, with distance being at a premium here, if he can get it close and kind of take the putter a little more out of the equation, I think he can do it. He was up there in the mix at the end. He just throws so dang far and so loudly, and I love watching him play.
Loudly?
Loudly. Like, do you hear the disc come off his hands? It's like I can't even make the noise. It's so...
The snap doesn't mean anything. It's just like an after effect.
I don't care. It sounds cool.
Okay, fine. It is cool. No, Seppo's great. That's
it
a great
sounds
pick.
Powerful. So I'm gonna take Seppo, and he's a nice guy to root for. I would love to see. I think he's one of those guys who's kind of on the cusp. Like he can mix it up. He's 10-30. He's got all the distance in the world. You know, maybe the woodedness here will kind of make him. Give him a vibe of you know, some of the woods in Finland, and we'll go from there. So let's go out on a limb and take Seppo Paayu. Who you got?
Okay. Well, I think Paul Macbeth is
going
to come back with the heat this week. Just seeing how he played in the final round last week, and I mean, like the door was wide open for him to win Worlds,
yes,
and he was not able to come through it. So I'm going to take him. He's going to come back with the fire.
I like it. I like it. Let's go over to FPO. I'm going to take in a similar vein as you, someone coming back with the fire this week, someone who still played well last week, but really struggled. She was dealing with some, you know, just emotions and everything during the week. I talked to her and she was having kind of a rough week, but I think she'll bounce back. I'm going to take Sarah Hokum.
Okay. Not a bad pick. Oh man. Do I want to pick Paige?
You could if you wanted to.
I know. I'm going to go Paige.
All right.
I don't think it's a hot hand. I know. I feel like it's
to
kind
clarify,
of
this
pick,
is
Bjerkus, but like, oh, Paige Bjerkus is my bad.
Is not at this one for people.
Yes,
who
we will talk about that
closer.
In a second. Yeah. I'm going to take Lil Paigey. I think she's going to do well. I think she's going to have to like rein in her emotions now as she's a newly crowned world champ, but I think
that comes with a whole other set of expectations, and
I know, but I think she can just seeing how poised she was all throughout the week of Worlds. Granted, she will not have her parents did go home back to Emporia and she will not have them here.
Right.
But she's got like, I mean, if her fan club was big before, it's probably quadrupled in size now. So yeah. And I'm part of it.
There you go. Oh, same here.
Same here. Little page. All right.
MPO top five. Actually, let's just say an FPO because it makes more sense. FPO top five. You know what? I'm at the point of the year where I just want to make fun picks. So After showing well at Worlds, I'm going to go with Kristen Tatar. I think this is the one where she cracks top five in the FBO field.
Okay. Man. I'm going to go Elaine King because granted, so she's the fifth highest rated player, but she does not have a ton of distance, and you don't need a ton of distance on this course. You just need to stay in the middle, and she is great at doing that. So I think she will perform pretty well on this course.
I like that pick. Smart pick. Okay, yeah, and on the MPO side, top five, I'm going Eagle McMahon for bounce back. There's no way he does not bounce back from 39th at Worlds.
Yeah, no I like way. That. I'm going James Conrad because he throws really well in the woods. Done.
That is
drop
true.
The mic.
All right, pretty easy. All right, and then before we go on the end of the show, we got to talk real quick. The Canadian Disc Golf Championships are going on this weekend. That's why we're with our picks. Like, we don't have a couple of the usual people because there's like a minor field split, not a whole big split in the field, but enough of one to where there's a few people from the usual mix gone. So Simon Lazat's up there, Nate Sexton, Nate Perkins, who we just talked about. On the women's side, you've got Paige Pierce, Zoe Andyke. Wait a minute. Oh, wait. No, wait.
Yeah.
That's right.
I told
Paige
you.
Paige Pierce. Go ahead. You reminded me and I forgot, so go ahead.
I know. Paige Pierce is signed up for MPO.
Yes.
Strangely enough.
No, I love it.
I feel like you need to get the scoop on that.
I'll have to if she has cell phone service up in Canada.
I don't want to count, but so there are 60 MPOs and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. She's like the 16th highest rated.
There you go. Oh, Simon's little brother is playing. Jason, he was caddying for him this week.
Oh, I didn't know he had a little brother.
Yeah, he was out there at Worlds caddying for him.
Oh, very cool.
It was cool. They were like speaking in German. Like you don't hear Simon talk in German a lot. It was pretty fun.
Yeah. Well, then on the FPO side, so
Zoe.
Paige will be playing in MPO. Yeah, we got Zoe. We have Haley Flintoft, she's from New Zealand, and she was out at Worlds too. It was really cool to see her out there.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Brianna Ainsley, just played with her for the first time. She's from Squamish, British Columbia. And did you see that little van she was driving? What is the name of that thing?
Oh, was that her?
Yes. So
I heard that one. Yeah, it took them like 10 days to get there so because the van only goes like 50 or something.
Yes, you totally scooped my story. But the reason that I met her is funny. I was throwing hole 18 on Fox Run where there's like OB left and right. But if you throw OB left, you're going over the road into the parking lot.
Yes.
And I did just that and I hit her windshield with my Wraith.
Oh my gosh.
Was standing right next to it, so she could have been killed. And I ran over and I was like, oh my god, I feel so bad. And she was like, oh well, at least it hit the windshield, because otherwise it probably would have dented the car. And I met her and she told me the story that it took her 9 days to drive from British Columbia. She stopped at Toronto and to get to Worlds because her little adorable van that I can't remember the name of only goes 50 to 60 miles an hour. And ended up playing two rounds together, and she is just like a lovely human being. So it was really cool. Nice. Anyway, Colleen McGinnis, I don't know if that's how you say her last name, but I also met her, played around with her at Worlds, and she's from Ontario. And then we've got Leanne Fulton and Erica Tucker. So
yeah, it's a smaller field. I don't think we're making picks for this one, right? We're just chatting about it.
Yeah, just chatting. The all big right. news was that Paige Pierce is playing MPO, and I would really like to know what her thinking is behind that.
I'll see if I can get a hold of her and figure it out in the next week or two. This one also, if you want to follow it, is going to be on UDisc Live. So, and Central Coast Disc Golf is up there. I know they were Corey, who I have to give a big shout out to Corey from Central Coast. He worked on our round recaps all week for Worlds. He was hustling, getting footage from everyone, putting good stuff together. I was supposed to do commentary on it. I lost my voice. He stepped up and did awesome. So, please go check those out. They're on the PDGA YouTube page. He worked his tail off all week, but he drove up to Canada. Ian of Central Coast Disc Golf fame was flying out to Canada. So there's going to be coverage of this one from Central Coast and UDisc.
Awesome.
A lot of disc golf to be covered this weekend. So pretty cool that we get both of those going.
speaking of, I want to also give a shout out. I met the UDisc guys for the first time.
Aren't they great?
Oh my God, they're the best. I've talked to them at least once a day, every day. And we were joking. They gave me one of their awesome UDisc hats, and we were joking that they now sponsor me. So
nice. I guess they sponsor me too.
Yeah, but they're awesome to hang out with. So.
They are. They're great. Out. We stayed with them, and they're just a tremendous asset. Super hard workers. A lot of fun to have them out there. So good to see them there. And you can check out their website all weekend for all the coverage that you could think of. So gonna be a good weekend for disc golf, even coming off of Worlds, Sarah. Hope the hangover from Worlds proverbially is not too large, because we gotta get back at it.
Yeah. So. Well, I hope Hurricane Florence does not affect any of our round too bad. That is
I think it's supposed to be okay. And also, you know, yeah, anyone who's in the path of that, we are thinking about you. Please make sure to be safe and, you know, do the smart thing.
Yep.
It's nothing to be messed around with. All right. Sarah, as much as we have other segments and things we could do, this has been a long one already, and we've got good stuff coming this weekend. So let's do this. We need a new PDJ Radio Challenge because it is a new month. We are going to pick the winner next week for last month's offhand challenge. I apologize. We did not get to that. But we will certainly announce that on the show next week, and we'll contact you before then. But Sarah, you have a new challenge for us this week. What's it going to be?
And I do.
This will go for the month.
Yes. So we thought we would make something a little bit more accessible.
Yes.
So instead of taking a video, we just ask you to take a picture this time and post it to Instagram and use the hashtag PDGA Radio Challenge. And we are asking you to take a picture of a funny or crazy place your disc has landed. And this can be anytime during the month this happens, or a past picture. Like I have.
Shoot. Yeah. If you got one sitting around, just bring it. Like, give me an example, Sarah. What's one like that's happened to you?
Okay, well,
like what's my favorite one? Funny or crazy.
My favorite one is if you have ever played Earlwood Park, which is in Columbia, South Carolina, where I used to live. So hole 16, you're throwing over an amphitheater, and there's a stage. I threw my disc, and a lot of people have done this before and since, but it's crazy that it landed in this place. It's going to be hard to explain a little bit, but so the amphitheater is like a covered stage.
Right.
And my disc went between the vertical, like, wall of the stage and the roof. So inside the stage, like internally, is this making any sense?
Kind of.
And between the vertical wall and the slanted roof, and it's like 1 inch of space, and my disc not only got caught in there, it went pretty much all the way through to the point where I could only see an inch of my disc.
Really, it sounds like you just need to post a photo of this with the hashtag PDJ Radio Challenge so I can see.
I will, except it was like 5 years ago, and I may
we'll make an exception. But I will also say this, it doesn't just have to be your shot. Like, if you're playing with a group of buddies and you take a photo of their disc, cool, just get involved. Let's do PDJ Radio Challenge this month. It should be fun.
I'm excited.
And really, there's no way to please this, Sarah. What if I went and put my disc like somewhere? I don't
know. Just be honest, people.
Honesty is the best policy.
That's correct.
Because then you'll feel really guilty if you win a prize illegitimately.
You lied. Yeah. We'll find out. We'll ask all of your friends and family.
Yes, totally.
Nobody has time for that.
So anyway, again, that's hashtag PDJ Radio Challenge on Instagram. Give us a photo of somewhere weird that your disc landed. Basically, rewarding bad shots this month is all it comes down to. But that's okay, because sometimes we got to make you feel better about your bad shots. All right, Sarah, that's going to do it for this week. Good luck in Delaware this weekend. Everybody who is listening to the show, make sure you go watch Sarah on the Disc Golf Guy next day coverage, because I know I'm going to.
No pressure.
Maybe I think I'm gonna prep some. I'm gonna take some notes. I'm gonna get ready to really analyze your play after this week. Throw in a couple highlights. I don't know who's doing commentary with Terry. We'll have to figure that one out.
Yeah.
Maybe Maybe I can get him to let me Skype in for this round, and I could just make it a big a big Raz round on video.
That would be hilarious.
I'm just kidding. I would not do that. But good luck. Have fun. Be careful out in the weather.
Thank you.
And I'm looking forward to talking next week about how Delaware went.
Thanks. Me too.
All right. So that's going to do it for this week. For Sarah Lamberson, I'm Steve Hill. That was PGA Radio. And we will check in with you guys next week. Take care.